Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Friday, January 2nd. I'm Taylor Heckert. Alaska will get $272 million from the federal government next year to upgrade its rural health system, officials announced Monday. The money comes from the Rural Health Transformation Program, a new five-year fund meant to allow rural areas to tailor healthcare systems to their specific needs. At a news conference in Anchorage, U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan said the program has the potential to reshape Alaska's healthcare system in a way that benefits everybody.
The federal government is providing the funding that we can design a program with that actually meets and reflects our unique challenges.
Sullivan spoke alongside Governor Mike Dunleavy, U.S. Representative Nick Begich, and Alaska Department of Health Commissioner Heidi Hedberg. Every U.S. state will receive funding next year through the Transformation Fund, but Alaska is getting by far the most per person. If it gets a similar amount in the remaining 4 years of the program, it will receive almost $1.4 billion total. Sullivan said the money will be used to strengthen rural clinics, stabilize healthcare workforces, and keep care closer to home, reducing the need for costly and disruptive travel.
It's certainly the biggest investment from the federal government to Alaska's healthcare system in our state's history.
The $50 billion Rural Health Transformation Program was authorized as part of the Republican-backed One Big Beautiful Bill, which also included new requirements for Medicaid access. The money comes after the state lost millions in public health funding and as federal subsidies for the Affordable Care Act are set to end. Phil Hofstetter is the CEO of Petersburg Medical Center in Southeast Alaska. He said in an interview that the new funding could have huge impacts on much-needed changes to the state's healthcare system, as long as regulations and bureaucracy don't get in the way.
In rural areas, we know how to use those funds. We know what challenges arise in our locations, and those might be different in different locations. So I feel like if we're not allowed to use those funds specifically to meet the needs of our communities, that could be a potential failure point.
But Hofstetter says he is cautiously optimistic about the transformation program. Alaska Department of Health Commissioner Heidi Hedberg said the state will share more details in coming weeks about how hospitals, community-based organizations, and federally qualified health centers can access the funds. In 2025, Alaskans experienced record-breaking heat on the North Slope, over 7 inches of rain in a single day in Ketchikan, and in recent weeks, extreme winds in the Matsu Valley. KNOM's Ben Townsend spoke with veteran climatologist Rick Toman about the Alaskan climate in 2025.
The one word to describe our weather and climate is extreme. We had extreme events in all regions of the state, including quite a number of state disaster declarations. This is, of course, continuing this trend of more frequent high-impact events that we've had for some years now.
You've got over 40 years of experience in Alaska studying climate, studying weather. Does anything surprise you still?
The devastation that we saw from Halong, you know, it's one of those things that we intellectually know can happen, but to actually see that, to see those pictures and the videos of houses floating away, that is really, really powerful. And it's really hard to think about that level of impact ahead of time.
You said the word of the year is extreme. And certainly in the last couple of months, particularly in the Matsu Valley area, we've had really extreme winds. What's your take on that?
This December is going to be extreme, not just from the impact wise, with the heavy snow in Southeast, with repeated high winds in Matsu, extreme cold in parts of the interior, but it's also going to be extreme in the atmospheric, climatological sense. All of this weather this month, the many days of extreme winds in Matsu, the heavy snow in Southeast, the extreme cold, they all tie back to this incredibly persistent, massive high pressure in the upper atmosphere centered over the Bering Sea. That feature has been locked in since the first week of December, and that is really the driver of much of this extreme weather. It's not unusual to get that for a few days or maybe a week, but to have this kind of big high pressure in December over the Bering Sea lasting the full month, in fact, it's going to last into the new year, That is really unusual. I would say we are very likely to see records set in that very technical sense of massive high pressure in the upper atmosphere over the Bering Sea. The winter of 2024-25 in South Central, at least at low elevation, really characterized by low snow. In fact, Anchorage had their lowest midwinter snowfall of record. And related to that, an extreme atmospheric river in mid-January produced heavy rain on the north side of the Alaska Range, say McGrath area and south, to the extent that the snowpack was washed away there, and then it didn't snow. And as a result of that large area without any snow cover, Iditarod had to be rerouted with the start in Fairbanks. So another extreme event for 2025.
Rick, is there something that I did not ask you about? Another highlight of the year, potentially a low light of the year that we didn't talk about yet?
2025 was a significant wildfire year. We did cross that million acre threshold. Fires concentrated once again in the interior, as that's where fires usually are. Probably the most impactful fire this year was the Bear Creek fire in June between Denali National Park and Anderson. And that fire actually resulted in the loss of people's homes. So not just cabins or seasonally occupied buildings, but rather people's primary residences. Also, there was quite a number of fires around the Fairbanks area that resulted in evacuations, and over the 4th of July holiday caused all kinds of traffic problems on the road between Fairbanks and Anchorage. So it was another impactful wildfire season for sure. In Southeast Alaska, of course, we had what's now become the annual glacier outburst flooding on the Mendenhall River in Juneau in August. And that was followed in September by a couple of severe windstorms, including one that produced lots of damage at the small community of Elvin Cove, northern southeast, and then Ketchikan's more than 7.5 inches of rain one day in September that produced flooding in the Gateway City. So there's really all kinds of things to talk about. Another one I want to hit on that really high impact, potential high impact for the environment was the early July heat wave in Northwest Alaska, where we saw communities right on the Chukchi Sea coast, Wainwright and Point Lay on the North Slope, got to 80 degrees. A reliable 93 degrees reported near Shungnak in Northwest Arctic Borough in that heat wave. And that heat wave lasted for a number of days. And so that kind of heat in that area, probably nearly unprecedented. It's occasionally been 90 in the Upper Kobuk Valley, but 93 at Shungnak, really quite remarkable. And 80 degrees on the Chukchi Sea coast on the North Slope. That is really amazing.
That was KNOM's Ben Townsend speaking with Rick Toman from the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Preparedness. The full video interview is available on KNOM's Facebook page. A few communities on Prince of Wales Island are facing complications with their city water supplies in the aftermath of last month's snowstorms. The City of Craig issued a water conservation notice Tuesday. Director of Public Works Oliver Lewis says they've reached the bottom 20% of the tank, which is a record low.
We're not trying to cry wolf, but we are to the point where we need the public's help to conserve water the best that they can so that it doesn't get to mission critical.
Lewis says the Public Works Department has been barely keeping up with demand since the freezing temperatures hit earlier this month.
Because of the way that we harvest our water and treat it, it is not meant to be stored for a long time. So in essence, we make water, we use it. We make water, we use it. So we're always kind of on that cycle of making it and getting rid of it so that we can make more clean water.
Lewis says when pipes freeze and then thaw, leaks can manifest. He suspects that's where a lot of the water usage is from. He urges people to turn off their water when it's not freezing, be cautious of leaks, and call City Hall to get them fixed as soon as possible.
a lot of these communities get hit by what I call death by a thousand cuts. Basically, if everybody's leaking a half gallon of water a minute, you know, and we have 640 hookups here in Craig, that's a massive amount of water, and it's hard for us to keep up.
The worst case scenario, Lewis says, is that the city will run out of water. If that happens, it could take up to 48 hours to rebuild the supply to turn the water back on. He expects to have updates on water levels after the holiday. From an Inupiaq Wordle game to a new language immersion program, a wave of efforts to revitalize the language has been sweeping across northern Alaska. Last month, one Ukiagvik artist received a Rasmussen Award to create an Inupiaq language workbook for kids. Aliona Niden with the Alaska Desk has more.
Elena Bengston has loved making art since she was a child. Now that she has a child of her own, she wants to use her art to help him learn the Inupiaq language. Bengston is an Utqiagvik artist who recently received the Rasmussen Award to create a workbook that will do just that. She will spend a year designing and illustrating a primer for children that teaches the Inupiaq alphabet and numbers. Bengston says her four-year-old son, Kahaliauk, was her inspiration for the project.
It all kind of started with creating for him and being able to use those resources. Now that he's like getting into the workbooks, I'm like, oh, I need to create a workbook.
Bengston grew up learning Inupiaq in school, and she says she's still on her own language learning journey. She practices speaking with elders and uses dictionaries in the Rosetta Stone app. But Bengston says children learn differently than adults, and she wanted to create educational materials that cater to the youngest learners.
You start kindergarten, you have the whole workbook, you're learning the alphabet, the numbers, the colors. And we have all that in English, but I'm like, what if we had that in Inupiaq?
Bengston says some resources for learning Inupiaq are available through the North Slope Borough School District. But she says regular parents might not have access to them.
I think it's really born out of necessity. Like, I'm sure there are resources out there. I'm sure there are things, but they're not something you could just go pick up at the store or buy online, you know.
Bengston's project is just one example of the language revitalization efforts in the region. 2 years ago, the school district restarted its Inupiaq immersion program, and a few years before that, Alaska Native linguists created a digital Inupiaq dictionary. And when the popular puzzle game Wordle took off across the country, local linguists and enthusiasts created an Inupiaq version.
I think it's a really important journey, and I think we've been making big strides recently. You know, with the history of it, it's definitely a dying language, but I think it's important we keep it alive.
Bengston says everyone can do their part to preserve the language, and the workbook is just one step for her. In Anchorage, I am Alona Niden.
For many, the New Year signals a fresh start. But for Alaskans, it also means it's time to apply for the Permanent Fund Dividend. Applications for the 2026 PFD opened yesterday. Over 600,000 Alaskans receive the PFD each year, which is usually paid out in October. It's not clear how much the 2026 dividend will be. In 2025, Alaskans received $1,000, the smallest PFD in state history when adjusted for inflation. The legislature and Governor Mike Dunleavy will determine the 2026 PFD amount during the upcoming legislative session. Dunleavy's budget proposal would pay roughly $3,600 to eligible residents, but passing it through the legislature is a long shot. It would require using about half of the state's savings, more than $1.5 billion. To be eligible for a PFD, you must be an Alaska resident for the entire calendar year and intend to stay in the state. Alaskans have until March 31st to apply. You can file online at mypfd.alaska.gov or pick up an application at any Permanent Fund Division office. For KFSK, I'm Taylor Heckert.